Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Anand Rathi Wealth Limited Q3 and 9 months FY23 earnings conference call. This conference call may contain forward-looking statements about the company, which are based on the beliefs, opinions, and expectations of the company as on date of this call. These statements are not the guarantees of future performance and involve risk and uncertainties that are difficult to predict. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Feroze Azeez. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you so much. Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for joining us for the conference call of earnings of the third quarter and the first 9 months of this financial year. Along with me, I have Mr. Rakesh Rawal, who is our CEO, Mr. Jugal Mantri, who is our Group CFO, Rajesh Bhutra, who is our CFO, Mr. Chetan Shenoy, who is our Head of Product and Research, and I'm also joined by Vishal Sanghavi, who is our Head IR, Investor Relations, and also the SGA team, who is our Investor Relations Advisors. To begin from the quarter perspective, we have delivered a strong performance in the third quarter on all three businesses, the private wealth business, the Omni Financial Advisors channel business, and also the digital wealth business. Our consolidated AUM has risen to 38,517 crores, which is a 20% growth year-on-year and a 7% quarter-on-quarter. This, of course, is a testimony to our emphasis on providing uncomplicated, holistic, and standardized solutions to our clients, which deliver the most efficient risk-reward portfolios. Our flagship private wealth business has grown its AUM by 20% year-on-year and 7% quarter-on-quarter to 37,500 crores. Though on an industry level, the net flows in equity mutual funds degrew by 55% in the quarter three, we have grown by about 74% instead of the degrowth, which is what you've seen on the net flows on equity mutual funds. And our overall net flows have grown by 94% for the said period of 9 months. And that stood at about 3,715 crores. Indian HNIs, of course, have started moving monies from physical assets to financial assets. And we have tried to catalyze this process by using mathematics to express the differential performance between physical and financial assets. In the last 9 months, we've added clients, that is about 1,151 clients, as against 801 clients in the same period. That's a good 25% growth and above on the client addition rate. And also one very, very important thing for a business like ours, which we are very pleased to announce, that we have had zero regret attrition for this quarter three. Regret attrition, any RM greater than 40 crores, we classify as a regret attrition, has been zero, astonishingly so. Now coming to the digital wealth business, I'd like to highlight that our digital wealth business AUM has grown by about 24% year-on-year and has moved up above the 1,000 crore mark, 2017, in terms of AUM. The client set has grown by about 15%, which is 4,076 clients now. That's on the digital wealth piece. OFA business, which is a SaaS platform, has added about 600 IFAs, give or take. And the assets under reporting has almost touched 1 lakh crore. And before I hand it over to Mr. Mantri, I would also like to highlight that our long-term commitment of growing the assets under management by 20-25% remains intact. And we're very positive that this number indicated from a long-term year-on-year perspective is a conservative number, given the fact that by the virtue of time we and client portfolios growth of 10-12%, we should be able to deliver the differential 13-14% by effort. And now I hand it over to Jugal sir. Jugal sir, can you take it forward from here?
Thank you very much, Feroze bhai. Let me begin with extending New Year wishes to all the participants that May 2023 brings tons of joy, happiness and prosperity to each one of you. Now coming to the company's performance, that despite short-term volatility, the mid and long-term outlook for the Indian capital market seems highly promising. We have delivered strong performance across all three verticals. Our consolidated revenue for the quarter ended 31st December 2022 stood at rupees 140 crores as against rupees 109 crores in Q3 FY22, registering a growth of 29% YOY, while revenue for 9 months FY23 stood at rupees 412 crores as against rupees 311 crores in 9 months ended FY22, registering a growth of 32% year-on-year. Our profit before tax for the quarter stood at rupees 58 crores, registering a growth of 36% YOY, whereas profit before tax for the 9 months stood at rupees 169 crores, registering a growth of 37% YOY. Profit before tax margin is slightly better at 42% in Q3 FY23 and 41% 9 months FY23. Our profit after tax for the quarter stood at a healthy rupees 43 crores, registering a growth of 35% YOY as compared to rupees 32 crores in Q3 FY22. Profit after tax for 9 months FY23 registered a growth of 37% YOY, which stood at rupees 126 crores. Profit after tax margin is quite healthy at 31% in Q3 FY23, which is the same for the 9 month ended FY23 too. Earning per share for the quarter 3 FY23 stood at rupees 10.4 per share and for the 9 month stood at rupees 30.2 rupees per share. For 9 month FY23, our flagship private wealth verticals revenue grew by 33% year-on-year, which stood at rupees 397 crores, while trail revenue grew by 27% YOY, which stood at rupees 135 crores. Profit before tax for 9 month FY23 on a standalone basis was at rupees 168 crores, registering a growth of 37% YOY, while PBT margin stood at 42%. Profit after tax for 9 month FY23 stood at rupees 125 crores, registering a growth of 37% YOY, while PAT margin stood at 32%. Return on equity of our flagship private wealth vertical as on 31st December 2022 stood at healthy at 40%. Given the favorable long-term macroeconomic climate for India and the rise of local millionaires and billionaires, we believe there is significant untapped market for the wealth solution providers like us. With this, we will now open the floor for question and answer. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We have our first question from the line of Rohan Mandora from Equirus Securities. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, sir. Thanks for the opportunity and congrats on good set of numbers. Sir, if you could share what was the gross inflows in 3Q and if you can split the net inflows of 1240 crores into between equity MF, debt MF and MLD?
Sorry, Rohan, you wanted net flows, Firoz here?
Yeah, net inflows of 1240 crores that was there in 3Q. If you split it between equity, debt MF and MLD?
Correct. So you want a split of the 3,715 crores or the quarter three number?
The quarter three number.
The quarter three number. Rajeshji, do you have that number?
Yeah. The equity mutual fund And that mutual fund put together, it was 818 crores for MLD, 165 crores, and 258 crores in other products. That sums up to 1241 crore rupees.
Sure.
The net
village. And so what would be the quantum of MLDs that are expected to mature in FY24? Any number that we have handy?
Right now it is not handy, but we can provide you, Rohan.
Sure.
Rohan,
okay.
Approximately it is 2,700 crores.
2,700 crores. Okay, fine. And sir, just want to understand on the trajectory on the employee expenses. If you look at employee by total revenues, employee OPEX by total revenues, that thing has come down from around 46% to around 43-44% in the last two quarters. So how should we look at it for the full year? Will there be an uptick there? And also, what will be the quantum of RMs which are not broken even on cost right now?
So, Rohan, when it comes to compensation for RMs, it works on a total comp concept. So the provisions of bonuses are larger, which is about 55 crores for the first 9 months, which is about 8 crores greater than the same period last year. So we work on a total comp concept, which has not been modified from 2017. So provisions on the bonus side are higher, which are not reflected in the statement you made. Does that answer, Rohan?
No, so actually the employee expense per total revenue has been coming down in the last two quarters. So are we...
Firoz bhai, I'll just add, see the advantage, what Firoz bhai has explained to you is the compensation for the RM fraternity. But besides RM fraternity, there is a team which is like operation, product, monitoring, and the finance accounts team. And that is where you get the advantage of operating leverage. Okay. Sure. Because that cost more or less remain flat.
Okay.
So that is why when you see the revenue goes up, you will see in percentage term that the employee cost will come down because that cost, which is the non-operating or non-variable cost, that remain more or less flat. There is a slight increase, and that is why you will see that the employee cost will keep on coming down when the revenue grows. For
got it, sir. And just second part of this question on how many RMs are yet to break even on cost?
So if you, we can give you that precise number. Rohan, if you look at break even as just the physical cost, I think it should be less than 10-12%.
Okay.
Okay, because a break even of with infrastructure cost all loaded, it could be different, but we'll give you the precise number.
Sure. And I just want to understand, like, how have been the MLD issuances from Nuvama this quarter? Has there been any dip on the issuances on that side? Or change?
The requirement of capital was lesser. So Jugal sir can give you the precise numbers if he has them handy.
So in case if you look at it, Rohan, now the ratio is tilting towards the outside or external agencies. As of now, when we talk, around 13% of MLD outstanding, that is from the external agencies. So the ratio which used to be 100% from the same group entity, now that is going in favor of. So and in this year, almost about 20% of the MLDs are issued by the external entities.
Sure, sir.
Okay.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. A reminder to participants to press star and one to ask a question. We have a question from the line of Pallavi Deshpande from Samiksha Capital. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my question. Just following up on the previous question about the RMs, we've seen a lower addition in this quarter. Is that anything to do with, the market conditions or... how should we look at RM addition going ahead? And just have put in my second question also with regard to the market share on the, you mentioned in the previous call about 1%, of equity inflows, taking that up to 3%. So what would be the timeline on that?
Yes. So let me answer the first one, which is the RM strength. The RM strength, generally, it happens by training and promoting AMs. So we have gone a little slow because we have to make sure that the person who's becoming an RM from the AM, the probability of successes have to be immense. So that's why you see a little slower addition. It's got not too much to do with the market potential in terms of market sentiment. But the good news is we have the next 30, 40 already slated who have spent about 2.5 years as an AM and as an apprentice under seasoned private bankers already. So that number should see a large uptake soon. And what was your next question? Sorry, I missed that.
Yeah, it was with regard to the market share. So, we've spoken about our equity market share at 1%, and I'm taking that up to 2-3%. So, any timelines you can share on that?
Yes. So we are looking at the market share increase. Like you might have heard me just a few minutes back, that the net flows have reduced by 55% on equity mutual fund, and ours have gone up by 74%. Which is a large dispersion to what the industry has got. It's because we are looking at numerically establishing our credibility in mutual fund recommendation. And I'll come to the timeline, which is your pointed question. So in the last quarter, we analyzed 109 equity mutual fund portfolios worth 1,000 crores outside with other distributors, transaction by transaction. And we realized that Anand Rathi's recommendation has been more profitable. And now that we've started being very numerical about our value add, to come to your pointed question, I think getting to a 3% market share will take about 4-5 years because that's as the market also will increase. And that's the target.
You mentioned, just to get this right, 109 mutual funds were analyzed that were outside the current universe. Is that right?
No, let me explain that a little more in detail. Now, if there's a prospective client we meet, we take the transaction-wise information and try and see whether the person externally has beaten Nifty or our model portfolio. The 109 is not mutual funds. Those are 109 unique HNI investors, external mutual fund portfolios, which we analyze and see whether we have beaten those portfolios which were managed by other distributors. And heartening, it has been heartening for us to see that 95 out of the 109 analyzed last quarter, our model portfolio would have kept them richer. And with this piece of audited information, the propensity for a client to give us a change of broker for a mutual fund has gone up reasonably.
Right. Right. Got
it. Does that answer?
Yes, sir. Sir. And just another one, if I may. On the CapEx side, we've seen a little uptick in depreciation and any distinct guidance on that side.
Yes. Jugal sir would be very well equipped to answer that. Jugal bhai, can I request you to take that one?
Yeah, there is no CapEx item on the P&L where you.
I'm talking about the uptick in depreciation that we've seen, slight uptick in depreciation.
So that is because of the Ind AS 115, that otherwise there is no CapEx expenditure overseas, CapEx-like company in the industry.
Right. Right. And, right. And so lastly, if I could just have, would it be possible to share a breakup between on the income side between the mutual fund and the MLD?
That is already there in the presentation.
Not the AUM, I meant the revenue. Oh.
Even the revenue breakup is also there. If you look at the page number 29 of the presentation, you will find the breakup. Okay, but I'll just repeat for you. For Q3, the mutual fund revenue was 50 crores, as against 42.5 crore in the corresponding Q3 last year. And the distribution of financial products is 86 crores, and other IT-enabled and other services was about 3.4 crore rupees.
Right. No, so that's what I meant. Within this distribution, if you could have, how much was the MLD and how much was
Largely it is MLD.
Pardon?
Largely, it is MLD only.
Right. Right.
Okay.
I'll get back in the queue. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Okay.
But let me just add one point to Jugal sir's comment. the long-term target of trail income to total income is 50%.
Okay.
And we are headed there. If you see the last 1 year, Nifty from December to December has hardly moved 1-2%, and you still see a trail revenue increase of 27%. Once the tailwind of the market movement comes, you will see a substantive change in these proportions because markets have to deliver at a point in time, not in this year. That in spite of that, we've had a 27% increase in trail.
So the 30% target, like you said, would be probably matching with your 3-5 year term for that.
Yes, madam. Yes, absolutely.
Right. Okay. Yes. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. A reminder to participants to press star and one to ask a question. We have a question from the line of Dhaval from IIFL. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, sir. Thank you for so much.
Mr. Dhaval, I'm sorry to interrupt, but your volume is very low. Can you use your handset, please?
Am I audible?
Speaking to me, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Good afternoon, sir. Thank you for the opportunity. So just one question from my side. Can you please provide the quantum of gross inflows in the MLD during the third quarter and also the split between the primary and the secondary?
Yeah, sure. 1,151 crores gross in primary, 277 in secondary.
277 crores in the secondary, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Thank you so much, sir. Thanks.
Thank you, Dhaval, for the question.
Right.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question, please press star and one. We have a question from the line of Aditya Srimankar from Ishti Advisors. Please go ahead.
Hi, I wanted to ask, what is the average yield on MLDs during this quarter and how it has fared year over year?
So, sorry, I missed your name. I'm so sorry.
It's Aditya.
Aditya, right?
Yeah.
Hi, Aditya. Aditya, yield by virtue of that nomenclature implies the per annum yield. First, let me tell you what's the yield of all the matured products. In an MLD, if you look at the yield per annum, we've made 1.17 in products which have matured. One is because yield is per annum on market value when it comes to mutual funds. On the model portfolio of mutual funds, we make 1.11. On the matured products, which you can backward calculate the yield, has been 1.17. Having made that point that the yields on both these instruments per annum on market value are identical, if not equal, almost. Now coming to what you make, we recognize this revenue upfront. So on a 3 year basis, we make about 5.5. On a 5 year basis, we make about 7-8%.
Okay, got it. All right, thank you.
Because in mutual funds, the trail income comes on market value, but this is recognized on face value, and all upfront as trading income, right?
Got it. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Aditya, for your question.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question, please press star and one on your phone. We have a question from the line of Prayesh Jain from Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Just a couple of questions. Firstly, on the expense side, other expenses, they have been kind of trending higher and the run rate used to be around 11 crores, kind of reached 17 crores. So what been on one of the questions alluded that large portion of the expenses are fixed in nature beyond the expenses of beyond the salaries or bonuses of RMs. So then what is this increase pertaining to? That is question number one. Secondly, on the mutual fund book, do we have any SIPs, and if so, what would be the share of SIPs in our mutual fund AUM?
Got it. So let me take the second one and I'll toss the first one to Jugalji. The SIP book is about 32-33 crores.
Okay.
Per month.
Okay. Are you tracking trending? Is this monthly or is it total AU and
the This is monthly. Monthly because we deal with HNIs. HNI savings come in lumpier chunks. So because if somebody saved about 10, 15, 20 lakhs in a quarter, he gives you that money as 40, 50 lakhs. That's the general trend. But still, having said which, the SIP number is marginally higher than 30 crores per month.
Yeah, thanks.
And for the first question, other expenses, of course, when we spoke of the expenses, it was pre-COVID levels. So I will ask Jugalji to give you some color to the other expenses.
Largely, if you may recall that because of the COVID, there was no physical offsites and the visits which we used to have on a quarterly basis, the strategy meets and all that. So this year onwards, all these activities have started, and these expenses pertains to the offsites, business strategy meet, as well as the traveling expenses, which were lower in FY22. More particularly, when you are comparing with the December quarter vis-a-vis December quarter last year vis-a-vis the current December quarter, the expenses are on account of increased expenses are on account of traveling, offsite, and strategy meet.
Okay. And just one on the, you mentioned that 20% of the MNDs sourced in the current year are outside agencies. So what is the kind of commission you made on those?
Same. It was very
marginally higher. Sorry. Marginally higher from Nuvama. So from 1st April, if there is a sourcing of about 616 crores, for the same period kind of an MLD, it's marginally higher.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Dipanjan Ghosh from Citi. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Three questions from my side. One is a follow-up to the question asked by the previous participant. In terms of the SIP flows, could you give some color on the redemptions you are seeing in the portfolio or any quantitative number on gross to net ratio? My second question is on the on the distribution fee that you get for incremental flows that are going into the existing schemes of mutual funds, and whether the incremental distribution fees have changed YTD or YOY, if you can give some color on that. And lastly, we have seen a list of NFOs happening during the current quarter or even the current year. We just wanted to get some color on how are the yields shaping up between FY22 and 3Q20 or YTD23. And also, are you able to lock in the yields on the NFO flows for 1 year, or is it like is it for a long-dated period like 2 or 3 years? So those are my questions.
Mr. Ghosh, your audio wasn't so clear. If you can again go one by one, it will be helpful because I could barely hear you in terms of it was a little muffled.
So is it fine now?
Yes, if you can pick up your headphone, if you're not using it, do something. Yeah, sure. If you can again go again with your first question, SIP number, you were saying something.
I just wanted to get some color on the SIP redemption trend and any color on the gross to net ratio in SIP.
Gross to net ratio, if you're looking at SIP redemptions or SIP stoppages, I don't think there have been too many stoppages because HNI is not so... So to answer your pointed question, it should be negligible. I don't have a precise number to that currently.
Sure. My second question was on the incremental distribution yields that you are getting into, that you are getting on fresh flows into equity schemes of mutual fund players, and how that has changed, let's say, between March and December or December. On incremental flows into existing schemes of mutual actively managed equity mutual funds.
So when we recommend mutual funds, we recommend a very pointed portfolio for most of our clients, and over a period of time, money moves there. So like I told you, it has been 1.11% yield on the 11th schemes weighted average as per our recommendation. It remains; it has gone up by about 2 paisa. Same period, December. December end last year, we were at 1.09. Now it is 1.11. For the 11 schemes.
Sure.
And we have our suppliers, which are mutual funds, competing with each other for our market share. So we don't see any stress on any reductions there.
Got it. That's great. My last question was on the NFO side, and over the last 6 to 8 months and even prior to that in FY2022, we have seen there has been significant amount of flows in NFOs, and also the NFO payouts to distributors have been quite strong.
Just wanted to get some color on incremental trends during the quarter and also YTD. And are you able to lock in the NFO yields for, let's say, more than 1 year?
No, we don't do any such advancement of yields because we don't recommend NFOs. Since I don't buy an NFO, so I don't recommend it to my client. So zero NFOs have been sold over the last 8, 9 years. So because if there is 570 equity mutual funds, out of which active ones are about 250, 280, and the best and the worst one have a 44% difference, and there's a lot of constituents which are already there, and there is an established fund manager with a philosophy, from a client-centric organization standpoint, selling an NFO, I don't see any merit to hurry into buying an NFO if it does not have a 3-year track record. So any equity open-ended fund requires a basic 3 years for us to be able to analyze behaviors of fund managers and his right-to-wrong ratios and stuff. So no NFOs sold, and that's been the philosophy. Unless there is some NFO which addresses a gap in the future, we'll be agile enough to adapt if it is something which makes merit from a client's risk-reward standpoint.
No, completely understand. Thanks for the answer, and all the best.
Thank you, Mr. Ghosh.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Varshit Shah from Envision Capital. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir. Am I audible?
Yes. Is that Varshit Shah? Did I pronounce your name right?
Varshit.
Yeah. Varshit. Okay. Yeah.
So,
go ahead.
So I was just wondering, like, what kind of reaction are you getting from the clients with regards to the whole active versus passive investing? Are any of your HNI or UHNI clients questioning you about an advisory versus distribution model, or why active or passive, and the entire value add that we do in the process? And is there any slowdown also in client addition? Because I also see in this quarter, the client addition is slightly slowed down from that angle.
Got it. So let me answer this question in two parts. One is, Varshit, the active versus passive debate, ironically, in the industry is happening without numerical measurements of their own portfolios. So what we do is, if the client is debating an active and passive, he needs to or she needs to first compute transaction-wise alpha or underperformance to a benchmark, which is missing. So what we do is we calculate transaction-wise alphas. People generally go by perceptions and go with narratives. Now, there's one client, let me give you an illustration on a little more casual note on a serious call. I met a client who wanted to move his 22 crores to an ETF. Then I said, okay, you can't read newspapers and decide that. Why don't you first check transaction by transaction, what is the alpha you've generated over the last 5 years? 966 purchases, 36 exits. If you take Nifty transaction by transaction, he himself had beaten Nifty by 2.7% per annum. So if somebody is not able to make alpha, it doesn't mean that you are not making alpha. First, get your own numbers. Mathematics is measurement is the first step of management, and that doesn't seem to be happening. Most people who debate that, they don't even have their transaction-wise alphas on their direct equity, on their mutual fund, on their PMS. So that's point one. So we don't see any risk on ETF, and the model portfolio which we have used all regression and all Nobel Prize winning formulas for the last 9.5 years from 1st June 2013 has generated 3.17% extra over Nifty after all costs. So if these numbers are there and they are mathematically accurately measured, people are guided not by narratives but by actuals for them. One size fits all doesn't work in wealth management, in our opinion, and a strong one.
All right. And on the client addition, is there any slowdown in the environment?
Client addition is not a slowdown. What happens is we measure clients, not all of them. We measure them if they have more than 50 lakhs with us. Mark to market brings some of them in the bucket, some of them outside the bucket, because there's no point counting a 10 lakh client. We count 50 lakh plus who has 4-5 crores as total assets. Now coming to the, so there will be some volatility in quarterly numbers of client addition and subtraction, because there's also subtraction possible. If somebody came back and took away 5 lakhs from 52 lakhs, he will no more be in this client list, because it's only fair to account for clients who are at a point in time greater than 50 lakhs with me. That's why you see a larger number last quarter, but to eliminate this volatility, you have to look at 9 months to 9 months. 9 months last year was 801. 9 months this year is 1,120, which is 320 more clients in the same 9 month period. So there is a client addition rate being increased, point one. And the second is we also try and measure the quality of client acquisition in terms of the first check. The first check average has gone up by about 70 to 80%. So after listing, which is a very credible thing for a business which is which requires some degree of branding from because people are parting with their money, has resulted in people trusting us at the beginning with more money than they used to before we were listed last December. Does it answer?
Oh, hi. Yeah, sorry, please go ahead.
It answered, or you want some more clarification for it?
Yeah, so have you seen the initial ticket sizes go up?
Yes, 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 we have. And some clients have given us outrageous starting values as well.
Awesome.
Which is a great indication of what lies ahead for a listed wealth management outfit.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir, for your question.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Sagar Jetwani from Philip Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, my voice is audible.
Mr. Jetwani, you're not audible.
Hello?
Yes, please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. So I just have one question. Do we plan to expand into B30 cities and what are the typical ROICs in long term if you expand the branches there? This is my only question. Thank you.
Thank you for your question, Sagar. Our strategy to expand into the full Bharat has been planted a few years back. So we are hiring patterns of our current RMs, our top 100 RMs. There are about 27, 28 of the 100 RMs who belong to unique smaller towns, tier 2, tier 3. Because we have a very strong principle of client centricity and a culture which Rakesh has built over the last 15 years to protect that, starting a peripheral unit by itself is something which may not be the most advisable. So these 27, 28 people may choose to go back to their cities which they belong, where their parents live, where they're brought up. They know the regional language. They're able to relate to the fraternity there. So that's our strategy. So in that process, we have started a Coimbatore unit. We have a Vishakhapatnam. We have Indore. We have now started Ahmedabad. These are smaller units which may not be called units, but those are supposed to be built brick by brick with one, two people who understand and who are our top RMs who go back to set up a business there. They are already breaking even from day one when they reach their home location. And that has a lower cost of building a unit and be it infrastructure cost. And every city in India, in fact, I would say all tier 2 cities for sure have at least 100, 200, 300 HNIs. And to go there, you can't send a English-speaking, golf-playing guy and expect that people be able to relate to him. So that's the answer, Sagar, from a strategy standpoint. And I'm sure Rakesh sir can add a lot on this count because all of it is brainchild.
So I'll
just ask for a comment from Rakesh sir.
Sure.
You covered this beautifully. I think the idea is to sow a seed, which we are doing in a lot of cities, and will continue to do so. And we know that how it sort of grows. So in Vizag, we have one RM, and now she's already trained a second person over there, and therefore. Soon we'll have two RMs over there. So in smaller cities, we have to organically sort of grow, and we have plans to grow it in a lot of smaller cities in the future.
No, but in what are the typical ROICs in, suppose, say, 4 or 5 years once you set up the branch? Just trying to understand that because the penetration is relatively slower in B30 cities. So that's where I was coming from.
No, I don't think that is true. I think that, for example, the AUM in Vizag that this lady is handling is about 120 odd crores. She's taken about 3 or 4 or 5 years to get there. In the big cities also, a fresh RM takes 4 or 5 years to get to 120 crores. So I don't see that being any different. you have the advantage of not too much of competition there. You also have a little bit of disadvantage that not too many rich people are floating around. So it balances off. So I don't think that the narrative that ROIs are going to be lower is very valid. The costs, you know, pertaining to office, et cetera, are very, very marginal compared to the rest of it. So, for example, with 100 crores, you'll have a revenue of 1.2, 1.3 crores. What kind of cost do you think will be there for having a small office? You know, a few thousand, 20,000, 30,000, 40,000 per month. So, I don't believe that, you know, your margins are going to be significantly different in smaller towns.
Oh, okay. That's helpful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Abhijit from Kotak. Please go ahead.
Hey, hi, good afternoon. Not sure if I'm reading the numbers right, but looks like you don't sell much of other alternate products like PMS or AIF. So any thoughts if that's the right reading? And a related question would be, any thoughts also on getting into investment management as well? Hello, sir.
Okay, Abhijit, I'll take this question. The last part I missed, but let me answer your first part. We don't sell currently PMSs and AIFs because the standard deviations of PMSs are significantly more. We have analyzed several PMS portfolios which have 6, 7, 8 PMSs, but our model portfolio on the mutual fund side, transaction by transaction, has beaten them. So currently we don't sell PMSs. And for the last 7-8 years as well, almost 10 years now. Why? Because there's tax inefficiency and several other reasons. We have a 7-filter process to have a product line approved. Without that, our client objective of 11-14% is being met. If you look at the daily standard deviations of most PMSs, operate at about 50-60% more than their corresponding mutual fund peers. That's one of the reasons, because we our objectives for the client are not just return-based, they're also risks which we measure. 3-year standard deviation of generally which should not be double-digit. So infusing PMSs results in increase in the standard deviation. Secondly, AIFs also have long-only AIFs. We believe that alternate investment funds should be truly used for alternate as an instrument. Equity common stock is the most oldest financial instrument. That being housed in an AIF is something which we disagree with. We have an AIF license. We will use it appropriately when you are actually doing something which cannot be housed in a mutual fund or a PMS platform regulatorily. Does that answer first part, Abhijit?
Yeah, it does. I think it also answers the second one, which was around the getting into doing these businesses in-house as an investment management firm. So I think your strategy or your thoughts on that, anyways, answers the second question as well. So thank you.
Yeah. So, in fact, an MLD can be always housed in an AIF. We will explore that in the future.
Thank you. Thanks. We have our next question from the line of Sadanand Shetty from True Equity Advisors. Please go ahead.
Yeah, my question has been asked. Thank you.
Thank you. We have a follow-up question from the line of Senthil Kumar from Choandre Capital Services Limited. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Am I audible?
Yes, please go ahead.
So firstly, congratulations for the good set of numbers, especially for the revised AM guidance. And my question pertains to the correlation between net client addition and private wealth AM growth. Actually, I see 40%, nearly 40% degrowth in net client addition on sequential basis, whereas we have reported a 10%, 11% growth in private wealth AM. And how should we read this, sir, your color on this?
Sure, let me answer that. I missed your name, sir.
Sorry. Senthil Kumar.
Senthil Saab, thank you so much for your wishes. Thanks for the question as well. Firstly, AUM, client addition has not reduced. If you see 450 for the quarter two and 270 odd for this quarter, which is quarter three, it will look like a reduction. It is not that the clients, some clients get added or subtracted because of movements in market or small redemptions which come through. So whenever you look at client addition, you have to look at a longer period because mark to market can move some clients up or down. Does that answer, Senthil, first part?
Yeah.
You have to look at 801 and compare it with 1120. So in 9 months, I've added 320 more clients than what I added in the first 9 months. Is that clear?
Yes, clear.
Okay. So it's not a reduction in the pace at which clients are being added. So that's the wrong conclusion. Okay. That second part is AUM. AUM is like a photograph. It is on a specific date. Okay, so like June end, September end, the Nifty was not at great levels. So net addition of inflows and outflows will give you a better picture of how much money we are getting from marketplace. The last 9 months have not been great sentiment. In spite of that, we got 3,715 odd crores from clients, new clients and existing clients giving us more money. When times are bad, we look better to several of our clients because in good times, everyone is making money. So when in bad times, clients give you more references and more AUM and they consolidate their portfolios with us, it is because relative comparison people don't do when everything is doing very well. People will buy a PMS and double their money, then they will not be so worried. But when they underperform elsewhere is when they start referring their friends. So 3,715 crores of net mobilization is a better number to look at in terms of new monies which came in, which was 94% greater than the previous year, same 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
You had another part also to the question. Sorry, I missed it.
No, that's it, sir. That's it.
Thank you so much for your question.
Thank you, sir. All the best. Thank you.
Thank you. We have a last question from the line of Pallavi Deshpande from Sameeksha Capital. Please go ahead.
Right. Thank you. Just following up on that, like you said, you know, in the rough times, we look even better. So, you know, what would be your outlook given the rough times seem to be continuing?
Can you use your handset, please?
Yes. So, I just continuing on the previous question of when you said that in the tough times we look better. So given the current environment, tough times seem to be continuing. So can we assume, you know, similar outperformance going forward on the net inflow side?
Thanks, Pallavi, for your other question. So I'll make one comment and give the last word to Rakesh sir. Are we doing enough and more to make sure that our long-term guidance of 20-25% holds? 2023 in our hope is going to be better than 2022. Irrespective, growing at 20-25% we think is a conservative guidance, clearly. And for 2023, we definitely attempting to beat that. And Rakesh sir, if you can give an elaborate answer to Pallavi Madam's question, it would be great.
So I think given the direction, our belief is that 2023 would be far better than 2022. And, you're already starting to see the results of companies that are coming in. And our belief is that, hey, if companies do well, then the markets will catch up sooner or later. And similarly, companies do well when the opportunities increase. If GDP grows at 5-7%, there's opportunities for companies to grow. And therefore, I'm not the believer of many of the people who say, hey, massive recessions are coming, etc., etc. So having said that, I think that there will be good quality growth in terms of the AUM per se, aided by markets. The second part is net flows. Yeah? Net flows is a function of client additions and penetration. Yeah? There's so much that we are doing, in, you know, to increase penetration of existing clients as well as acquisitions. I think Feroz mentioned the entire audit program that we have started, that when you audit the assets lying outside and show to the client mathematically that those assets are not very efficiently placed, there is a large tendency of the client to bring those assets for better and more efficient management with us. So I think exercises like this, whether it is audit of mutual funds, audit of insurance policies, audit of real estate, and so on and so forth, which gives them clearly that, hey, what they are making there and what they can make here. So this exercise brings in, you know, brings in depth of penetration. So we believe that these exercises will lead to, you know, the net flows having a very robust momentum next year. Yeah, that's what I wanted to say. Does it answer, young lady?
Yes, sir. Thanks so much.
One little extra. Thank you, Rakesh, for that answer. Pallavi, if we look at this business, has got a vintage advantage. As you progress, RM vintage and client vintage helps. If you look at the client vintage segment-wise on a year-on-year basis, if you look at the five-year-plus clients, have an average AUM which is four times more than 1 to 2 years. So if I just extrapolate time passage and the averages remaining identical, then we are looking at growth greater than what has been indicated without client addition as well.
It's a bit...
Pallavi, sorry,
yeah.
You're not audible.
Right. Okay.
Your voice is cracking.
Yeah, it's just my... Can I just fill in one last one on the MLD side? If, you could have some... you have some quite a few bunching of MLD maturing June 2023. You could that, you know, cause any volatility in MLD flows for the FY 20...
Sorry, which FY? You're speaking of FY 23, 24?
I'm speaking of June 23.
Your voice is very muffled, Pallavi. I'm missing you. Yeah.
The June 2023 MLDs, you know, those maturing in June 2023, will that cause more volatility for FY 24 inflows of MLD?
No. We have extrapolated our maturities, and that's a reasonably smooth curve, I can tell you that. And I don't know why you're specifically asking June 2023. Is there a particular reason, Pallavi? You're asking June 2023 because...
Well, MLD, some of them are like a bunch of 3 years.
So we have a very well placed maturity profile. And for reasonable periods of time, and our rates of reinvestments are driven by the client's allocation decision, and when the reinvestment comes, there is hardly any conversation because if there are gaps in the allocation, they automatically get reallocated. So for a reinvestment of 100 rupees, there in most cases, we don't even have to discuss more than 5-10 minutes with the client because there is an allocation already decided. So reinvestment, just like the mutual fund industry used to have an FMP as a product, FMPs used to mature, they used to get rolled over. That's the kind of principle. So to answer your pointed question, Pallavi, there is no, it's a reasonable smooth curve of maturity and 80-85% reinvestment, which is decided by the allocation and not by individual conversations at maturity, is the nature of the business.
Question from the line of Sunil Shah from Turtle Star. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. Feroz and team really need to appreciate the culture that is being cultivated in the organization. I guess we are looking at, you know, four different products of 11%, 12%, 13%, 14% return for the client. And, you know, it's really good that long-term compounding is actually what will roll out for the organization because of the stickiness of the client. So my point is the uniqueness that we do is the MLD product, which is not what, you know, easily from the wealth manager side available. And we are focused on what we want to do. So would MLD involve any amount of risk at maturity for any client? Because now we are going to be almost 20% from outside of our organizational concern. So I just wanted to make sure about the risk in the MLD part. Could you just give me comfort on that, please?
Yes, Mr. Shah. She rightly pointed out that we are very positive about our culture and the client centricity. We, of course, every organization aspires that, and so do we, and we are very positive about that. And the culture built has a lot of inspiration from Rakesh's HUL experience for about 10-12 years. Now coming to your pointed question, MLDs, the reason why we used to have 100% of MLD in an entity which was a group entity is because we stopped selling Edelweiss and Reliance Capital MLDs, which you used to sell previously. We have a team in the research which identifies credit risk and is reasonably ahead of the curve. That's why Reliance Capital, which was a AAA rated NBFC which issued MLDs, we quit Reliance Capital 2 years before some of the mutual funds companies didn't quit till default. Now coming back to, unless we are very comfortable, we don't give away credit risk management to any other company. Nuvama, of course, we got the comfort with the 54% holding by Nuvama. That's why you see close to 600 crores has gone there. But MLDs, as long as the money, like the group entity also, Jugalji is the best person to tell you. And since my NBFC is also overlooked by our group CFO, who has been with the group from since 93-94, the kind of management stability there and the money allocated and very prudently deployed, unlike most NBFCs, we are an asset-backed NBFC rather than a liability-backed. Liability-backed NBFC, then an asset-backed NBFC. So probably I can, we can take this question offline and I can give you more information for the lack of time since we have gone to 1 hour 5 minutes already.
Fair enough. No issues. I get the point. Thank you so much. Thanks for the answer. Thank you.
Jugal sir, you want to add something?
If there's anything to be added from Jugal sir, yeah.
As you rightly suggested, we can have offline discussion.
All. Fine, sir. I'll get in touch. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your amazing comment and your question.
Thank you. We have our last question from the line of Rohan Mandora from Equirus Securities. Please go ahead.
Sir, thanks for the opportunity again. Just wanted to touch base on that client addition discussion again. So, because in this quarter, the expression that you are giving that if the AUM is going below a certain threshold, we are not counting them in the number of client count. So, would it be fair to say that most of these are due to redemptions in this quarter? Because MTM hit may not be there in this quarter. And if so, like, what would be the quantum of clients who would have completely exited the relationship?
What happens is Q2 number might have been inflated because of Q1 number, which was June quarter, was very depressed. The rate of addition in gross, there's something called upgrade, downgrade of clients and net addition. If I look at net addition, that has marginally gone up. I'll give you precise numbers. Redemption as a trend is not influencing this much. The client attrition number is very low. And if your RM attrition is very low, client attrition further goes down. But you will have to allow us some time to give you precise numbers. Your question is very valid. We'll give you the paper for sure.
Sure, sir. I'll touch base offline for this.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I would now like to hand the conference over to management team for closing comments. Over to you.
Jugal sir?
Yeah. So thanks, friends. I take this opportunity to thank everyone for joining on the call. I hope we have been able to address all your queries. And on 2 points where we have suggested offline discussion, I will request Mr. Vishal Sanghvi and our SGA team to have the meeting or call arranged and queries addressed. In case if you have any further information requirement or any further query, kindly get in touch with our IR head, Mr. Vishal Sanghvi, or CFO, Mr. Rajesh Bhutra, or our advisor, strategic growth advisor, or investor relations advisor. Thank you very much.
Thank you. On behalf of Anand Rathi Wealth Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.